Hi, Daniel.
Hey there, how's it going?
Very good.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Hey, Juliana, can I find Dropbox on my computer and not my tablet?
If you have it installed on your computer, I can email you the applications. Let me do that right now.
Thank you. I use my tablet for the Zoom.
Yes. I see. Okay.
Well, I see we've got a quorum.
If only it could be so. If only it could be so.
I believe we would call you the czar.
I was just about to say things would run a lot better, but if it's just you and me making decisions. I mean, you know.
What I'm hearing is when you get staff comments, you want the decision in the staff comments.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah.
We can't do that.
Why not?
Because Christina McGranz, who is not with us at the moment, might scold me. I couldn't handle it. Hey, there they are. Do we not have an A and a B? We just have four.
I think we have four. That's what I've got on my
That's
screen.
Awesome.
Yeah. Compared to when I started several years ago, BZA meetings have gotten shorter, which is great. Or not necessarily shorter, but the agenda has gotten shorter.
Yeah.
The number of items. Sometimes they're still as long, but most of the time they actually are shorter. I remember leaving a couple BZA meetings at 6:30 and 7 o'clock at night a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give Brian a lot of credit. He's really trying to wrangle this sausage making process and streamline it.
Well, I'm trying to get the shared content to work for me, so. Okay, I think I got it.
Brian, I enabled share and you're the co-host.
All right, I got it, so we're good.
Welcome, Joshua. There it is. I'm assuming you still have your jammy pants on?
At best.
Oh, we're recording. Wonderful.
Daniel, it looks like we have the attendees all here, and they will be promoted when you call for people to speak.
Okay, great.
Just waiting for a couple more staff and board members.
Yep. There's Christina, and there's Grant. Good deal. And there's Don.
Sorry, I lost my directions.
Everybody all at once. That's good. Okay. We're going to go ahead and get going then, since we all just kind of arrived. And welcome. And all right. Let's get going here. Okay. Welcome to the Knoxville City of Knoxville Board of Zoning Appeals. I am Daniel Odell, Chair of the BZA, and I'll be conducting today's meeting. Here online with me are the members of the BZA, Don Horton, David Dupree, Christina Boulder, and Grant Rosenberg. Also here online are city staff members. Today's meeting will be conducted in the order of the agenda. Agendas were sent out to prior to this meeting to all attendees via email. And then pursuant to the BZA's administrative rules, each matter on the agenda will be considered in the following order: staff comments, proponents, opponents, rebuttals, discussion among board members, a motion and then a second, and then further discussion among board members, and then finally a vote. Members of the public may address the board, and the following rules will apply. Each person may speak for up to 5 minutes and shall not have more than one time to speak, except that the chair may allow for an additional 2 minutes to an applicant for rebuttal. When more than one person wants to speak to an issue, each side is limited to a total of three speakers, and each of those speakers are limited to 5 minutes each. The board may ask questions of any speaker and may allow more time or more speakers by a vote. Speakers should limit their remarks to the facts of the case and should avoid repeating comments that have been previously presented to the board. If you wish to speak at the appropriate time, please raise your hand on the Zoom meeting platform. And then when called on, speakers need to state their name and address for the record, please. Appeals of the decisions made by BZA are made to the Knoxville City Council. A petition for such an appeal shall be filed with Plans Review and Building Inspections Department no more than 15 days after the date of the BZA decision. I will now ask Ms. LeClaire to call the roll.
Christina Bowler.
Here.
Daniel Odell.
I'm here.
David Dupree.
Here.
Don Horton.
Here.
Grant Rosenberg.
Here.
All right, thank you, Juliana. One thing we need to do before we get going today, because it is an online meeting, I need to propose a special motion. It's a motion. I need to make a motion to confirm that conducting today's meeting by electronic means is necessary to protect the public health, safety, and welfare of Tennesseans in light of the COVID-19 outbreak. That's a motion that I've been asked to make on behalf of our board. Can I have a second for that?
I'll second that motion.
Okay, all in favor, and please, Juliana, call a roll call vote on that.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Daniel Odell.
Aye.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries. Julianne, I'm trying to remember, did you send out, do we have minutes from our last meeting yet?
Yes, minutes were sent out with the other documentation. Those are for the rescheduled August meeting that was held on September 3rd.
Okay, thank you. I have obviously not read those. Do we have can I get a motion from anyone on the board that had a chance to read those?
Yes, I move to approve.
Mr. Dupree has a motion, and Grant seconds. Christine or Julianne, if you would call roll call vote on that, please.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Daniel Odell.
I'm going to abstain.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
Hey, Grant, you're on mute.
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you. All right, we do not have any old business that I am aware of. And so we're going to go ahead and proceed to new business. So the first file on deck, first application is 9C20VA. Is there someone here to speak to this application? It's the address 6914 Sheffield Drive.
Hey, Bill Mitchie, you've been promoted to allow to talk. You may be on mute.
Can you hear us now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great.
Okay, this is Daniel Levy. I'm representing Bill Mitchie, and my address is 3523 Maloney Road, Knoxville, Tennessee. Also have the applicant here as well.
Yeah, and this is Bill Mitchie, 6914 Sheffield Drive here in Knoxville.
Okay, thank you very much. One second. All right, if you all will please tell us about your, I'm sorry, real quick, I need to ask, are there any staff comments on this?
No additional staff comments.
Thanks. You, yeah. All right, if you all would please go ahead and tell us about your variance and what your hardship is.
Yeah, so what my client is looking to do is add a functional and usable front porch to their property. And so what my client enjoys doing is sitting out in their front yard and talking with neighbors, and what they don't have is a covering for shade and protection. And so we are looking to provide an unenclosed covered patio off the front door where they can have a few chairs and sit out and enjoy a usable front porch. The hardship would be that based on the current requirements that they would only be allowed to have a 2 foot overhang at this front porch, which obviously would allow for no usable furniture and no usable space. We think what we've proposed, which is almost 30, which is about 31 feet off the front property setback, and it is in compliance with the spirit of the code in that it's open. It only has a few columns that would come down and touch the ground, but it's pretty much all open air. It's got open gables that give that more open feel and doesn't impact the visibility as you look down the street. Bill has gone and discussed, and I'll let him speak to some of this, but has gone and discussed the project with nearly the entire street and has full support of that. Bill, you want to explain some of the process of what you did there?
Yeah, this is Bill. I had gone to pretty much, well, it ended up being 13 different neighbors on my street. There's one on there from right around the corner from us on Haverhill that just happened to be walking by at the time I was doing this, and they wanted to sign too. But we explained to everyone exactly what we were doing, what we wanted to do, what the variance, what we were requesting from you guys, and absolutely 100% support. I mean, there wasn't anybody that I talked to on our street that had any objection to it, and there were several that were hoping that I could set a precedence with this, because they would also like to do something similar. There's also a map there that shows where I went on the second page. Oddly enough, the only signatures that I didn't get from neighbors were from my neighbors just to the Wesley Roadside next door. They're in their late 80s. They're essentially shut-ins. I've discussed it with them, but I wasn't able to get a signature from them just because they wouldn't come to the door for obvious reasons at their age. So, but outside of that, I've the support for this has been 100% positive, and I hope everybody, I hope you all see it that way too. So.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, sir. Need to ask real quick if there's anyone here to speak in opposition to this. And if so, if you would please raise your hand on the little Zoom platform here. I don't see anyone raising their hand, so we'll move straight into any questions that our board members have.
How deep is the porch?
12 feet.
Typically about half of it is 9 feet out from the brick face. Where the steps come out are just 12 feet.
I have a question for the staff. If, is my mic on?
It is, yep.
Okay. I don't see my little icon. If this is approved, does it recalculate the RN setback based on the average of the whole street, the whole block?
It does not.
It does not, okay.
And this doesn't impact the total yard usage?
It does not. It would change. The request is to go beyond the 5 feet allowance for encroachment into the setback. They're wanting to encroach into it and build it to 12 feet. So that's the request that's before you.
And it's because of the overhang, not the columns, correct?
It's both the columns and the overhang go beyond that 5 foot line.
Okay.
And does the garage also project out more than it is now? I can't.
The garage overhang does project out to help with some definition, but it does not, you know, violate the setback.
The setback. Just looking at the overall topography, I understand why the original home builder placed the house where he did. Is there a little bit of slope going off the back on the back, would that be the back southeast side of the property?
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I'm just noticing that several of these houses on that street and likewise around are actually positioned further back on their lots. These lots were cut the way they were because of how they're sitting on the topography. That's the right place to put the house in order to not have to spend a ton of money on a big basement and retaining walls and so forth. But the result of that is that you can't build off the front very much and not cross that setback line. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's pre-existing to do that. What they're requesting doesn't seem unreasonable to me at all. It seems very logical to do that. And they're doing it off the structure that's in place, because of how the land lies right there. So I understand why that house is where it is.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we approve this variance based on the reasonableness and the conformity to the standards. I think conformity to the zoning ordinance. As Daniel mentioned, you can't move the house back any further. And I think having a front porch is a reasonable use for a homeowner on property. And I don't think it fits within the characteristics and the character of the neighborhood. So I think that's a form of a motion.
I'll second that motion for 9C20VA, and I think that this neighborhood was kind of adopted under a suburb mentality, and I kind of enjoy seeing a return to the front porch. I think it's good for a community, not bad. So I get behind the, everything Grant just said. I'll second that. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion, comment, question by the board? All right, motion second. I'll ask Julianne, please call for a vote.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Daniel Odell.
Aye.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
Okay, great. Thank you. Motion carries. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Move on to our second agenda item of the day, 9D20 VA. The name on the application is Amy Sherrill, and it's for 1324 North Central. And I think we're going to talk about some parking. Amy, are you here to speak, or someone who's here to speak to this?
This is Ben Mullins, 550 West Main Street. I'm here with Mr. John Lyle, who represents the owner of the property. And Ms. Sherrill is also, I believe, available to speak as well.
Daniel, I'm online.
Hi there.
Hey there.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Ben. And I'll tell you what, let's see. Before you tell, I'll reverse order a little bit. Are there any other city comments, staff comments on this other than what was sent out already?
No additional comments.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. If you would like, please tell us about your variance request and what your hardship is that you're requesting your variance based on.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Odell. This building, of course, it's on the corner of Scott and Central. It's an area that has kind of turned into commercial and was recently rezoned to CG2. This particular property has been used for commercial for several years. However, we cannot locate any permits or CO ever approving that use. The owner believes that he had that in place, but was not. He had a contractor at the time when it was done and was unable to locate that. The property is under contract to be sold to an attorney for an office, and we discovered that the parking is basically non-existent on this lot. Ms. Sherrill has provided a couple of different options that she's drawn up to try to create some parking that would be code compliant in the back, but none of those options will work for one reason or another. The variance we're requesting is to go from the four spaces allowed to functionally zero with a caveat. Along East Scott, there is parking that's allowed on the street. It is street parking. We think we can get three, maybe four spaces there along the lines. There is a Knoxville area transit stop there at the corner of Central and Scott. So that's why that normally would be five spaces required, but we're allowed to reduce that to four under the ordinance. We have reached out to 28 different properties in the area under section 11.8 to see if we could obtain some type of shared parking agreement, you know, and many of the neighbors really don't have any problem with there being parking from time to time. However, entering into a long-term agreement and with the overlap of hours, that's something that we have not been able to get anyone to agree to. But we have at least reached out and tried to mitigate the need for this variance through seeking shared parking access. Given this lot, I mean, it's a small lot of record, an insufficient lot of record. There's basically, for it to be used as an office that's allowed under the zoning ordinance, there's really no way to do that without obtaining the variance that we're asking for. So we would respectfully ask that this board approve a variance request. And Ms. Sherrill can address any of the technical issues with regard to how she tried to find parking on the spot.
Sure. Is there any other person to speak to this request, Ben, or are you the only one speaking?
Mr. Lyle's here. He's the one that's been kind of pounding the pavement looking for shared parking agreements with Ken Joe and other businesses in the area. Sure. He can talk about those efforts. However, they haven't been fruitful.
Okay. All right. John, would you like to speak now or
Now would be fine. I'm the current owner of the property. I bought it 15 years ago, and I ran a consulting business out of it for veterinarians. I bought it at the time the neighbor behind me said that there were previous businesses in there, so I assumed that you could run a business. It's zoned commercial, but the building is residential, and that's the stinker.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Daniel, just Mr. John Lyle, he's here in the room with me. He wanted to add something to that. He's the realtor.
Daniel, I wanted to, and the board, I wanted to tell John, the John that just spoke is the owner of the property. That's John Dietrich.
Sure.
John, would you give him your home address?
Oh, 7745 Trophy Run Lane, Knoxville, Tennessee.
Thank you.
And my name is John Lyle. I'm the realtor representing John Dietrich. I'm with Caldwell Banker. My address is 118 North Peters Road, number 247, Knoxville, Tennessee, 37923. So we also have Amy on the line, who's the architect that did I think what the city asked us to do, Scott Elder and Jim Tinty, when they made a site visit, which they were kind enough to do, and we greatly appreciate. We had no idea that we had an issue because we, first thing I did as a hopefully diligent realtor is to check the zoning with Amy Brooks at MPC, and we had commercial zoning. We all assumed we were in fine shape, and it was only just because of a casual inquiry to the codes department, just to see if there were any issues or whatever on the property, that we discovered that we were zone commercial, but this was actually still considered a single family residence. So we asked what to do. Scott Elder came out, Jim Tinty came out, met with John Dietrich, the owner, met with me, also met with our potential buyer that is an attorney in Knoxville, hoping to put his law office there. And they explained to us the process of going through the BZA. So that's why we're here.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you very much. Let me ask really quick if there's anyone here to speak in opposition to this request. And if so, please raise your hand on the little Zoom thing here so we can call on you. Give that a second. I don't see anyone raising their hand to speak in opposition. So thank you. I think, you know, one thing that might be helpful for our conversation real quick as a board, Peter or Brian, could someone kind of outline that their, from a code and zoning standpoint, what they've run up against? I'd like to make sure we are on the same page about the difference between how something's zoned and what it was last used as.
Well, this is Brian Berry with the city. The piece of property is currently zoned commercial, and it was zoned commercial under the former zoning ordinance when the city before the city adopted the one as of January 1st. You know, uses are typically either conforming or non-conforming with regards to what's permitted on the piece of property. The city did not have a history of permitted uses in this parcel. It was my understanding based on some discussion with Scott. So I think at the time, some uses were going in and out of it and just never being recorded with the city at some point. And so ultimately that's kind of what landed us here, is like the gentleman spoke earlier and kind of said inquiring about it. It was kind of brought to the attention of city staff, and that's what led us to this point. So.
Okay. Thank you. What questions have we got for Mr. Mullins or Mr. Lyle and Ms. Cheryl?
Mr. Dietrich, where did you park?
There is, hold on, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can't hear you.
If you look, there is a driveway that is, if you see Central and you see Scott, you go down Scott and you turn right after the house, and there is a parking driveway there. And we fit, you can fit four cars there, actually. There's an outlet building there, and we could park side by side, and there were just two of us, so one parked on one side, one parked on the other, but that's where we were parking.
And Mr. Dupree, this is Amy Sherrill. The issue we run in there is the commercial use, according to the city engineering requirements, you're not allowed to back out of the driveway onto a street. So the fact that this is not residential, but commercial, that gives us that little hiccup of, you know, one way or another, it's not compliant according to the commercial use and parking requirements. They will gladly continue to park that way as an option. However, it's not technically compliant.
Well, that would be if you back out. What if you pull in the back and then you pull out forward when you're pulling out of the drive?
The engineering requirements cover both directions, that you can't pull past and then back into the parking any more than you can back out of it into the street.
So I have a question. You mentioned it's possible to get about three street spots. Where would those street spots occur? Where would those street spots be located?
I can answer that. I had the city put a parking limit on the side, so there's already signs there saying you have like an hour or 2 hour parking. The problem I had originally was people were parking there full time, and it was dangerous because people were turning right off Central onto Scott, and you couldn't really see them or going out. So we had parking there, and it has not been a problem.
How many cars, though? You could fit three cars there along the street?
Yeah, easy, three.
Grant, it's around 70 or 75 feet between where you turn the corner and their driveway, and that's from the actual sign that starts the permitted one-hour parking zone.
When people ever came to my office, that's where they parked.
Okay. I used to live on this street, so I'm pretty familiar with the property. And I think the previous use, it wasn't I don't ever recall this being and having no impact on the neighborhood. I lived a block away and don't recall it having any issues. But one question one question I had for the, I guess, for the realtor, for John. You said you reached out to property owners for parking. Did you reach out to, I know there's event space down the street, the new parking requirements. You referenced that in some documentation that Juliana sent shortly before the board meeting. You referenced another variance application from a couple years ago on the event space on the corner a block away. Did you reach out to that property owner about leasing some space?
This is John Lyle. I did not reach out to that property owner because what I did was I identified all the parcels that were within 500 feet of walking distance from the property. That was 28 parcels. That particular parcel is very close to being at 500 feet, give or take. It could probably be interpreted both ways. But because of the development there and my survey of personally observing the site and knowing what's going in there and seeing their BZA application where they were requesting for a lot more parking than they actually had on site, I felt like there was not any possibility of us reaching any sort of an agreement with them because of their need. Their application, I think, called for something like 150 spaces, and I think they had, I'm going off the top of my head here, but 30 or 40. So I ruled that out. What I tried to do is look at all the parcels that were available and see who had a large enough piece that if they would agree with us, we could put in the size parking lot that we would have to have. The exclusivity of it, where it can't be shared, that is that's out of the ordinance of 11.8, that it's not, it has to be exclusively assigned to us. It can't be shared by multiple people, if I read the ordinance correctly. So that was one limitation to obviously event space as well, is that I felt like there's little chance that they would grant us four spaces or possibly five, however many we actually needed, exclusively to us to use.
The hours of operation for the business, for the office.
And that was another issue. And that's the lawyer, of course, is mostly daytime, but there is some evening work as all lawyers do. So I think that the hours restriction, the 500 feet and it being really close to that, the topography of having to go up the street on to get into 1324, the ADA requirement, I couldn't quite see how that they could transverse that type of setting, and the fact that it was an event space. There's just too many reasons of why it wouldn't work with them. So that was not somebody that I actually reached out to and spoke with. The people that I did identify are all in my Dropbox file that we sent you. I'd be happy to go over with who we talked to and what they said if you all want to know that.
No, that won't be necessary for me. That was one that I thought was conspicuously absent, was the one that I thought was the most logical space to lease would be that event space, considering that there wouldn't be as much conflict between the evening events or weekend events and office, you know, 9 to 5 office hours. But I recognize, you know, yeah, it's a block away, it's a little further away, and there's some grade to get up there. How many attorneys are gonna, or how many office staff are gonna be in this building?
Well, at the moment, there's one attorney. There probably would be a staffer. The property couldn't hold more than, there's four rooms in it, actually, that could be considered office. There's a very small room that would be more like a file room or something that would be very hard for somebody to operate out of, and then there's a kitchen. So I think the maximum occupancy would be four. John Dietrich, what was your occupancy when you used it?
We had two people, and we had a conference room. The front foyer was one office, and then there was a bedroom on the left, the first bedroom that overlooks the wraparound porch. That was my office. Behind there is another bedroom, which you could use as an office. And then you have a kitchen and a bathroom. That's all there is there. And then a dining room. The dining room we used as a conference room.
Okay.
And what is that business located right across Scott from the location?
That's the Kenjo property. And I talked to the landlord of the Kenjo property. I also talked to the tenant. Kenjo is actually the actual operator of the mini market is a tenant. The property, the actual property owner is a gentleman, I'm not sure I can pronounce his last name, Al Bihimani. That's the owner of the property. I talked to both of them. Both of them said there's no chance of them dedicating any spaces on that property to us, that their parking lot's full all the time and they run extreme hours there. So they and Wes Carruthers at Downey Oil Company is who owns Kenjo, the brand. I spoke to both of them in person and or on the telephone, I mean. And so both of them have denial requested denial in my Dropbox file.
Sure.
And the other thing that I'm not sure the parking at Kenjo is code compliant. And that's another thing that this ordinance requires, the 11.8, is that wherever we go or whatever we do, it is code compliant. So I'm not sure that Amy would have to look at that, but that side parking lot on Kenjo, if you're looking at that aerial map that we're looking at, I'm not sure that that's completely code compliant. But the idea of them dedicating four spaces exclusively to us was just completely out of the question. We also tried, the most obvious person that could help us here is Rick Thrasher. Now, John Dietrich has known Rick Thrasher, and they've been friends for years, and Rick was very accommodating when I talked to him. But Rick pointed out to me, he said, John, I have to have my parking spaces for me to be code compliant. And, of course, they built a new building there, so when they did, it had to meet the code. So he said, all my parking that is there that's paved is code compliant for my business. He does have a back lot, and we thought about the possibility of accessing that back lot, but there's several issues with that. One, Rick parks his trucks back there, and they use that to unload tractor trailer trucks and stuff. So he said it was out of the question, but had it been in the question to access it, we're going down a single lane alleyway that goes both ways. There's no signs that say it's one way or the other. It's very tight to turn off of Central onto that alleyway, and you can see it on that map. That would be a great spot if we could work something out, but Rick wasn't interested in a 5-year deal. He wasn't interested in, other than just a gentleman's handshake agreement, that if we had overflow, we could park there. But I also asked him, how many times did John Dietrich and his people ever park in his parking lot? And the answer to that was none. So I don't think there would ever be a need to park there, but Rick said he'd accommodate us on a gentleman's agreement, but beyond that, that would be it.
Okay. Thank you, John. I appreciate that. Are there any other questions from the board?
Well, yes. I'm still a little bit confused between residential and commercial. If this property was defined as commercial, absolutely defined as commercial, would this be an issue? Well, what would be the issue if this were already defined as being a commercial use?
And I think that's a great question.
Mr. Horton, if I can jump in. I mean, the zoning has been commercial for a while. It has been used as office or commercial for quite some time. And Mr. Dietrich, when he converted it from residential to office, he had a contractor who he thought had followed the proper steps with the permitting and the certificate of occupancy to do that. But we are unable to locate that information. The fact that it's commercial is what's requiring the additional parking requirements that we just simply can't meet based upon the existing size of the lot. But it has been used for commercial for a number of years, whether that was a pre-existing non-conforming or whether use or whether it was just always just non-conforming and was never brought to anyone's attention. But the zone allows for the commercial. In the CG zone, an office use is one of the least intensive commercial uses that you're allowed, but there's just no way we can do any parking there without basically knocking the building over and making it a parking lot.
Right.
John,
is that a question for city staff that you need to have answered, or is that? Don, do you feel like you got your question answered?
I have. You've answered it.
Okay. Any other question or comment from the board? My thought on this is that, and I think I've probably said this historically many times over the years, but this entire neighborhood was not originally a commercial district. It's a patchwork quilt of different lot sizes and lot shapes, and a lot of areas that are now designated commercial were originally residential lots, and then they weren't necessarily combined with other lots to give them sizing over the years to allow for adequate parking, or they were parceled off at different places as well from larger lots. And so under today's code, there's no opportunity to really get the parking requirements on the lot itself. And that's sometimes because of size, it's sometimes because of shape. But there's a lot of that across this entire district in North Knoxville. The result of that are situations like this, where you cannot come up with a way to meet parking on that existing lot with a pre-existing structure that ultimately is what creates the value that folks are purchasing it for. And so you end up needing and having to ask for a variance request like this. Because you can't meet code. The code also allows for the request of a parking lease or a parking arrangement on another property. I'm not certain that that's necessarily a solution that can be pointed to as a fallback for that is a way to fix these issues in this neighborhood. And I think Mr. Lyle has done a tremendous job outlining that in calling the 28 or 20 some number people that he has to see if he can find a way to meet that parking requirement. But I'm not certain I don't understand that from what I understand as the burden even on them. I think the burden is one of the things that we make decisions on every other variance request on size and shape and topography and those land-based issues that are in front of us as BZA. In this particular case, it's a small lot. It's a substandard lot. It doesn't meet the requirement, and it doesn't, you know, that's the reason why they can't meet code. The property's been used in this form for years, and there's really no reason I see not to give them this variance request simply based on the land itself and on the pre-existing condition that's there, and regardless of whether or not they can find parking in the neighborhood or any other reason like that. So real quick, that's my thought on it, and I'll be in favor of voting to approve this this request.
Was that a motion?
I can turn it into one. I was going to see if there's
okay,
any.
Okay, well, I will move. I will move that we approve this based on the smallness of the site, and it's an existing structure on there, and limited development possibilities, and the trend is on Central, all of this fronting property is commercial and will be used as commercial.
I will second that request, and just on the, I mean, we've had this precedent over there long-term with the growth of North Knoxville. Parking will be an issue over there. But at this present time, it's not. There's plenty of street parking in that area, and we've made these types of we've granted these types of variances, I think, for years now over there. So I can get behind this, and I'll second that. A motion and a second. Any further conversation or question from the board? No? Okay. Julianne, please call a vote.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Daniel Odle.
Aye.
David Dupree.
Gonna abstain.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
Okay, 4 with 1 abstention. That motion carries. So 9D20VA is approved. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
9E20VA is our next one up. That is Development East LLC. Oh, Graystar Development East LLC, I apologize. 2120 Cumberland Avenue. Let's see, is there anyone here to speak to this? And if so, Please state your name and address for the record. I see a Jay Silverman and a Matt Evans. And I'm sorry, I can't hear anybody if you're speaking.
Sorry, I was talking to mute. Matt, would you like to go ahead?
Yes, sure. I'll tell you very quickly. Let me just go ahead and ask if there's any further staff comment from what was sent earlier.
No additional comments.
All right, thank you. All right, yes, Mr. Silverman, please go ahead and tell us about your grant request and what the nature of the hardship supporting it is.
Okay, excellent. Matt Evans is the applicant, and my name is Jay Silverman. I'm the architect for the project for Dwell Design Studio. And the development is located in two blocks on Cumberland Avenue. And it is built on two sides of an existing alley, which places it part of the project in the CU2 zoning district, part of the project in the CU1 zoning district. So it's on Cumberland Avenue, spanning between 22nd and 21st Streets, and also fronts Lake Avenue. So it takes up that both of those blocks there. And so the project is a mixed-use development with leasing and amenities, as well as retail along Cumberland Avenue, with apartments located above the retail on those existing blocks. And the site, as you can see from the submitted elevations, has significant topography on it. So we are looking for variances to two different conditions. One is in CU2, the Cumberland Avenue portion of the site, there is a step back requirement in section 4.2.3, building massing 3C. And this diagram shows it best. That step back, it requires a 10-foot step back to occur at the second floor of the building. And we are meeting that condition on the northwest corner of the building along Cumberland Avenue. But due to the slope of Cumberland Avenue, you can see in that northwest corner view, Cumberland Avenue slopes up as we go east. And so that becomes a one-story step on the northeast corner. If you don't mind going over to that northeast corner view where it says variance one showing 12'4". That that condition there is where we're requesting the variance. The retail portion of the development, as I mentioned, projects out 10 feet. The residential steps back, and we do have the two-story required step on the western side, but we just kept the retail step out on the eastern side, and rather than pull the residential out 10 feet, we felt like the building form looked better, and we met the intent of the code by keeping the retail projecting out from the residential. So just to clarify, we're not looking for a variance from the 10-foot step back. We're just looking for relief from the two-story requirement to make that step back on the northeast corner. And the hardship is the topography along Cumberland Avenue. The second variance that we're looking for, and I think I need to approve rewording by staff, but is the requirement for transparency on 21st and 22nd Streets. You can see we developed these diagrams, and someone highlighted variance two on those diagrams. If you want to blow those up, you can see our calculations. So the way that that the zoning requires transparency to be measured, it's between 2 and 10 feet above the sidewalk. In the CU2 district, 75% transparency required in over on the Cumberland side. On the Lake Avenue side, 40% transparency. The condition that we have is that the building is you know, it's a multi-level and it's parking, and the site is sloping down from Cumberland to Lake. And because of the way that the site slopes and our requirement to screen cars, we're not able to meet the transparency between that 2 and 10 feet. You can see in the overall elevations, both east and west, that we do have significant openings on both of those sides. But unfortunately, due to the measurement requirements of the zoning, we are less than the zoning requirement. So we calculated in one case, let me see if I can see, the one that's on the screen now that's pointing to variance 2, in that condition, we're 50.7% transparent within the zone that's highlighted. In the dark gray crosshatch, and 75% is required there. We were able to meet it on the other block on the CU1 area, but then if you scroll to the next page, thank you so much for driving this. The next page, you can see the west elevation on 21st Street in the CU1 portion on Lake Avenue. We have 34%, where 40% is required. And we have, in the CU2 portion, we have 50.6%, where 75% is required. And the openings that are above and below, or really above that zone, are not counted. But we do have additional transparency.
Okay. Thank you very much. Briefly, I need to ask if there's anyone here in opposition to this, and if so, will you raise your hand for me on the Zoom here? All right, I don't see anyone raising their hand to speak in opposition.
Daniel, can I? This is Brian with the city. I'd like to make a comment. So staff was provided a memo that the variance request number 2 was to be revised.
Yes.
And this was based on plans that were provided after the variance had been submitted for the advertisement on the agenda. So I think at some point, when a decision is made, I guess the memo that was provided and the variance request for number 2 needs to be read for the record in the minutes to make sure that that's the variance that will be voted on.
Okay.
This the one that we got in the email before the meeting?
It should be, yes.
That I didn't have time to look at, so... I did see an email.
I can explain that if unless the staff would like to do that.
Jay, if you'd like to go ahead and explain it as the applicant.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks.
We were originally thinking that we would ask for a variance from the 2 and 10 foot measurement zone of requirement, but staff requested that we change our request to a variance from the percentage requirement.
I'm sorry, Jay, say that last part again. You said that changed the variance from what?
The zoning requires you to measure transparency between 2 feet and 10 feet. And we originally requested to increase that zone of measurement so that we would be in compliance, but staff directed us to request the variance from the percentage from the percentage required.
Understood. So Brian, just to make sure I'm tracking with what you're saying, what's written here on the application is correct or not correct?
On the application for the revised page 2.
Yes.
Give me just a second.
It looks
it correct. It is not correct.
Not correct. Okay, what is the differentiation that was and you're saying the differentiation was published?
It was not published. So what was published is what you see right here.
Yep.
And the applicant provided plans that did not correspond with what they said was the variance request for number two. So they're actually asking for a lesser variance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's what was provided in the Word document that was included that all the board members should have received. And the applicant, Jay or Noel, needs to read and request that the change for the variance provided on number two read what is in the Word document to make sure that they match.
Okay. Do you mind pulling that up on the screen and I can do that. Just want to make sure I read it correctly. Okay, so the second variance we're asking for is to decrease the minimum ground story transparency requirements along 21st Street from 40% to 34% on the section of the facade located in the CU1 district, and from 75% to 50% on the section of the facade located in the CU2 district. Decrease the minimum ground story transparency requirements along 22nd Street from 75% to 50% on the section of the facade located in the CU2 district. That's our formal request, our second variance request.
Okay, thank you very much for the explanation. I think I'm understanding that now. Okay, what questions have we got for them? Anything?
I move we approve 9D, the current application as revised. 9, is it D or E?
It is E.
9E20VA as revised.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. The overall design, I think, is fairly, I mean, it looks like it's in conformity with other things that we've approved in the past on a couple other projects over there. This location is at a weird corner with some topographic challenges to it. Are there any other questions or comments?
Well, I do have a question about what is behind the transparency. Is this, it's more of a curiosity than an issue. Is it parking on those lower levels as you go down the slope, or will there be storefronts and usable space behind them?
There, it varies around the building, but that's a great question, which I didn't address previously. The retail wraps as far back as possible along from Cumberland Avenue, and then it transitions to parking. And the leasing office is on the west side of the building. That wraps as far as possible back. And then we transition to parking. And then on the low side, there's a bike amenity on the 22nd Street elevation. And then on 21st Street, there's unit residential unit at grade on the corner with parking going up the hill.
Okay. It's not a glass storefront up against a block wall.
No, we're doing brick and then screening on the parking to avoid things like that.
Thank you.
Jay, where are you all in your planning process with this? Are you anticipating this is the only variance request that you all will need for this project? Have you worked out your parking garage and your drive aisles and space widths and all of that yet?
Yes, we've been through our third round. We did a staff, I think staff approved a parking depth variance, but we don't have anything else to request to this board at this point. I think we're in our third, completing our third round, and pending this board's approval, we'll be complete with our zoning review.
Sure. And it looks like Lake Avenue worked
very hard to comply with everything else as possible.
Yeah, and it appears that you have. To have a project of this size with only a couple requests, that's a good thing. That's a not been a normal thing that on other projects of this size. They typically come with other conversation about drive aisle widths and parking spaces and so forth. Lake Avenue looks like that's going to be residential retail level or ground floor level on that. So on Lake Avenue, is that right?
That's correct. There's residential, because Lake Avenue slopes, there's the bike amenity on Lake, and then some parking below, and then residential.
Yeah.
Residential though.
The overall layout, I understand why you all have done what you've done. You've got the retail where it needs to go, and then and it looks like there's retail all the way down Cumberland right there. Am I seeing that correctly?
That's correct. The entire Cumberland facade is retail along with some leasing and amenities. There's a breezeway to get access for pedestrians from the parking. The leasing and amenity is two-story. The retail, is actually planned to be similar to what's currently on site. Those retailers want to come back.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead, Don.
Yeah, these elevations really point out the topographic difficulties along the Cumberland Strip. You don't think of it as being that much of a grade change between Cumberland and Lake and just across the front of the block on Cumberland. So,
yeah, you don't when you drive through there. Matter of fact, I thought the elevations were maybe lying a little bit, and so I started poking around in KGIS, and they're not. You forget that slope right there when you just drive by, because it is fairly gradual, but it's significant when you're putting a building that size on these lots. So I agree.
Some of the topography was taken up in the past by the parking, and you can see out there today there's a retaining wall. Because the sidewalk is up above the current parking lot, but yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and there, as you go east, Cumberland's flatter, but it kind of the strip kind of dives down to get under that bridge.
Absolutely. We have a motion and a second to approve this agenda item on the table. Is there any other comment or question from the board before we call for a vote? All right, hearing none, Juliana, will you please call for a vote on this?
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Daniel Odle.
Aye.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
All right. Thank you. 9E20 VA is approved. I appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. On to 9F20 VA. Falconeer Design Company, the property there is 462 West Hillvale Turn. Are there any additional comments from the city, real quick?
No additional comments from city.
Thank you very much. Hearing none, who's here to speak to this this agenda item? I see Mr. Falconeer's on the line. Who else is here?
I'm here, Damon Falconeer.
Hey, Damon, thank you. Would you please tell us about this variance request and the hardship that's driving you?
I'll give you my address, 4622 Chambliss Avenue, Knoxville, Tennessee. This particular property is on the corner of West Hillville Turn and East Hillville Turn, and requiring, based on the new zoning ordinance, requiring a 25-foot setback for a corner piece of property, but the adjacent properties only have to have a 15-foot setback. And so we are requesting, that's our hardship. We're adding a pool house on the corner lot with the existing house. We're requesting to reduce the rear yard setback from 25 feet to 15 feet for the pool and the pool house. We are withdrawing the next part on the request, and it says, and to 11 feet for the 4-foot wide pool apron. We're withdrawing that based on the rear property neighbor asked that we not do that. So we're withdrawing that request, and we resubmitted a revised drawing showing that. And the location indicates the most appropriate place for the intended use, where we have provided a letter from the neighbor indicating his consent with this location.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me ask real quick if there's anyone here to speak in opposition to this. I don't see anyone raising their hand or speaking up, so we can proceed with any further question or comment from the board. So this property does front two streets, right?
It does.
And I believe what's in front of us is the revised application. It's not...
Correct.
Okay, correct. Okay.
You'll see a 2-foot pool apron there in the rear, and mm-hmm. then you'll see that even the roof overhangs are not within the 15-foot or the 8-foot side yard or rear setback.
Okay. The board have any questions for Mr. Falconeer? Damon, I'm just looking at the setback, the map you've provided, the site plan you've provided here, and trying to wrap my head a little bit around the two streets and how that's affecting the location here. Moreover, because of the existing structure, I think is what I'm trying to get my head wrapped around. Where, if there wasn't the 25-foot setback and there was the 15 like you outlined in the variance request, if this was on one street, in other words, could you build a pool and pool house anyways on
this? Yes. Okay. If I was the next property over, I could build it within 15 feet of the rear property line. Yes.
Okay.
So this is because that property line is considered a rear property, although if we were considering where the existing driveway is, it seems as it would be more of a side setback. Is that what's going on? That it seems like this would be a shorter setback if it was considered a side yard?
No, since we're a corner lot, the new recode requires 25 foot on a corner lot rear yard setback. And the front of the house faces West Hill Del Turn.
you do have rear yard setback requirements to both the east and the north. Okay. Because of the corner lot. Is that?
This is Brian with the city staff, if I could comment a little. So East Hillvale Turn is considered a corner side setback. And that is 15 feet. The to the north is considered an interior side setback. And that is 8 feet in what is shown.
Yeah.
And the, I guess what would be the east property line where the pool closest to the pool is considered a rear setback.
Okay.
Now the neighboring adjacent property would also have a rear setback. They would just have two interior side setbacks instead of a corner side.
Thank you. Is topography an issue here? And I recently walked through that neighborhood and I'm remembering it's a fairly steep street around there.
There is a slight slope front to back, Don, it looks like to me, and Damon can probably speak to this better than I can, but looking at down Hillvale, it does look like it slopes.
Right. Looking to the south, water would run out of the pool easier. It's the level ground is to the north, leveler. Yeah. Ground is to the north.
Right. That appears to be right, yes.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we approve this variance based on the topography and the siting of the structure and the corner lot. And I think it meets the character and the confines of the neighborhood, and adjacent property owners seem to be satisfied with it, so I don't see any issues with us approving.
I second that.
Okay, we have a motion, a second to approve 9F20VA. Is there anyone else with any questions, anything? Mr. Dupree, it looks like you're still looking at it. Are you?
I have no questions.
Okay, yes, sir. All right, then Juliana, please call a vote.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Daniel Odell.
Aye.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
All right, motion carries to pass 9F20VA as it was submitted. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
All right, is that, I think that may be it for us. Is there any other, anything else? That's the last agenda item for the day. If someone speaks up, I'll adjourn the meeting. All right, meeting adjourned. Thank you all. See you soon.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks.